These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, Michael. Michael, on Belichick, you think he'd be consistent? It seems like he don't value the plays he trades out than he does, and with, like, the Cooks trade. I mean, he trades a first for him, and then, you know, I know he really wanted to trade Butler for him, but looking like Chandler Jones, we get second and Cooper, and Jamie Collins, we get a compensatory third. I mean, that's a little bit ridiculous. But on the defense, at least he knows that you don't need a great defense to win. But now after the Super Bowl, he knows you need some defense at all. I mean, that was ridiculous. So I'm glad they're going for an Eli Connor and maybe a pass rusher after. At least they're addressing that. It looks like they're going after Tlaib, Mike Durant said. So we'll see what happens, buddy.
Okay, let's see. Again, with the report that the Pats have actually engaged the Broncos on trade talks, I mean, I think that's a natural. But what would you be surprised if they line up next year and Cyrus Jones or Jonathan Jones or Johnson Batamosi or Eric Rowe is lined up opposite Stephon Gilmore?
No. No, how could you be? No, the way they do business, you never know what's coming. I mean, to me, it would be Rowe. But so, again, or maybe they put Gilmore over there and Rowe on the other side. But would I be surprised if one of those guys is the second corner? No. Belichick's totally arrogant enough to say, I can win with this guy. He did it in the Super Bowl, for crying out loud.
Rick and Woburn wants to weigh in with the Celtics thought. Go ahead, Rick.
Ice. Hello?
Yes, Rick, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Peter and JP, I know he's coherent. Go ahead, Pete.
Am I? I think I am.
Yes, you are. Okay. Most of the time.
All right, Average Al, I wanted to talk about that a little bit. This is the first year last year he played five alive. This is the first year he's... Amir Johnson, forget about him. He's got Aaron Baines and Daniel Tice, who are averaging more than 10 rebounds a game. They're eighth in the NBA in rebounds. Last year they were 26th. So Al Horford is playing the four. He's guarding people on the perimeter. He's going to get less rebounds, obviously, and this is going to be controversial, but Kyrie Irving is a ball hog, so Horford's not getting any shots. And I don't like Kyrie Irving. He's a ball hog. He can't pass, and he can't play defense. And I don't want anything to do with him.
Huh. That is strong. So you are a Al Horford defender, and you're saying a lot of his problems
are related to
Kyrie.
It's just the way it is. I mean... Jalen Brown's averaging five rebounds a game.
Hey, Peter, what did you think of Isaiah?
In the league in rebounds.
What did you think?
Okay, this is why we don't engage the callers. They talk, we talk, and then I hang up on them. Go.
So let me get this straight. He's a ball hog. He can't pass. Doesn't play defense. Does this guy like Isaiah? Because Kyrie Irving's better all three of those things than Isaiah is.
I will say, I feel the ball moves less with Kyrie out there than Isaiah.
Oh, I don't.
I do.
I don't.
I feel it's a little more sticky that, you know, even the ball stuck with Isaiah. There's no question about it. I feel like when I watch more Celtics games that are worth watching, when they're not up by 30 points in the fourth, when it feels like we've had a lot of those recently. But when they're close games, I feel like they don't really have an offense in the fourth. It's just all Kyrie.
So that might be true.
And with Isaiah, even though he was taking most of the shots and he owned the fourth and all of that, I still felt the ball moved. I feel it's more of Kyrie's show this year than it was Isaiah's show last year, even though I think Isaiah scored more. He did score more, probably shot more. The stats wouldn't back up what I'm saying, but just the way when I see it, it feels like it sticks more with Kyrie.
I mean, I think Isaiah had more veteran guys around him that he probably trusted late in a game. I bet you that's part of it.
I don't know. Going to that Houston game last Saturday, they were spreading it around. Marcus Morris was getting shots.
Well, that's fair. That's two. He only had two shots in the fourth quarter, that one. That's true.
I mean, but to me, Isaiah was the worst in terms of the ball sticking. Please, Isaiah, he was the definition of a ball hog, and Kyrie's a way better passer than Isaiah, way better.
Chris in Maine, what do you got for me on the Pats?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to basically ask you guys a question. You guys have talked about an either-or situation with Sherman and Tlaib. With it being a predominantly passing league and a lot of the NFC teams being, well, we all know what happened in the past Super Bowl, what do you guys think about the concept of both of them coming here? Because we know Eric Rowe wasn't good.
Chris.
You know.
Yeah. Chris. No shot. No shot.
They only need one corner.
If you get one, do backflips and be. If they brought Talib back or brought in Richard Sherman, that would be so tremendous on so many levels, and an upset on so many levels. Don't beggars can't be choosers, man. If you take one, take it. If you get one of those guys, take it and run, man.
Yeah, it means they're not trusting bums like Cyrus Jones, Jonathan Jones, Eric Rowe, should at best be a third corner.
It means so much. It means that they're willing to spend a little bit. It means they're willing to sort of bend again on who they bring in and the kind of personalities that they'll account for. It shows you that they're going for win now kind of players to maximize Brady. He'll just say so many things, and they're all good. So if Talib or Sherman, count your lucky stars, man.
And they could use that kind of move right now. Bill could use it too. Like, because it would win back some of the, not that the public trust is all that important, given his status overall, but you win back some of the fans. You probably win back some of your players on top of it. Like, look, I made a mistake. We're going to go out and get a real guy. Like, to me, they're going to get one of those two because I think they both want to come here.
Chris in Medford, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I just think that in all this past talk, the Jacoby Brissett trade is getting way overlooked. First of all, it was a bad trade. And second of all, it's kind of the smoking gun to prove that the Patriots didn't have a plan for the future when you look back on the past season.
Agreed. No, I mean, it's a smoking gun that something came up during the year that Bill never had intended to trade Jimmy Garoppolo and then was forced to. I mean, that's the smoking gun. If it was always in your plans to trade Garoppolo, you keep the third guy that you drafted and developed. To me, that's the second biggest smoking gun. The number one smoking gun is that they never answered the phone from anyone else, not even San Francisco. San Francisco tried to trade with him at the draft. San Francisco called him a week before, and Bill wouldn't take the call. And then all of a sudden, the Monday before the deadline, he calls. So something happened that weekend. So that's, to me, that's always been the number one smoking gun. He never even allowed for another team to make an offer until the morning before.
I mean, it really is a stunning turnaround, right? When you get Adam Schefter saying they wouldn't take four number ones for Jimmy G, and then they flip him for a second in the middle of the year.
Tells you something happened. I mean, call me. I'm no Inspector Crusoe or anything, but something tells me something changed in there.
You know,
or someone was told to do something.
I forgot all about Dorsett, and not that it's apples to apples, but he's another guy on the roster. Or Dorsett, Britt, Malcolm Mitchell, Chris Hogan, Edelman. Like, Cooks is gone. They're going to move Cooks. He's gone.
And I'm saying I think Solder might go first. I think one of them's gone. If you're talking about Talib,
they got to keep Solder, Mike.
You're talking about Sherman. You were entertaining Michael Bennett. Reportedly, again, there's various reports on that. But if you're in on that kind of player, something's going out the door. And that's either Cooks or they're not going to pay Solder. And Solder's going to cost him more money, Maz. I'm not talking, people like to say AAV and, you know, at 12 a year. That ain't the real money, folks. Look at the real money. Solder's going to command a 4-year deal, which means he's going to get big bonus money, $20, $30 million guaranteed. That makes him much more expensive than Brandon Cooks. That's why I start there.
Okay, he's more expensive because he's more important, is what I would tell you. What are you going to do, send Tom Brady into a season without a left tackle?
Maz, if you're asking me, I keep Solder over Cooks. I'm telling you what I think they might do.
Okay, they're going to keep Solder. I think at the end of the day, they figure that one out. Too important a guy, too good a pro. You know, to me, there were too many variables there. Ultimately, I think he stays.
Mike and Everett, go.
Hey, so I think with $23 million under the cap, and you know how that can be worked, and obviously now I can agree that Belichick's tenure isn't as long as we thought it could be, that the idea of acquiring Talib in a trade and then signing Sherman for some kind of deal is not completely out of the question.
It is. They're not getting both. Stop. They're going to trade for Odell Beckham, and they're going to sign Fletcher Cox. Can we not be stupid?
Matthew's going to be here. We'll trade for Lavonte David, the linebacker in Tampa. Like, they can't do all of this.
They're not getting every player.
Why do you need both?
And you know what? One of those guys in here, you've got to create a wide berth. You've got to, meaning, accept a different personality, a bigger personality. Talib always has the undercurrent of violence and menace, and Sherman won't shut the hell up. Like, you bring both of those guys in? The locker room's not big enough. You can't have both of those guys.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Oh, it'd be tremendous.
Imagine the hooting and hollering going on in there. If they get either one of them, again, because I'll take either one. I would pick Talib first. I will have a lighthouse in my shorts like you would not believe.
You're Scott in Weymouth on the Bruins. Hi, Scott.
What's up? Good afternoon, gentlemen. All right, Felger, here we go. It's a tough segue, but we're going to go to the Bruins real quick.
Do it.
Are you not concerned at all as a fellow hockey fan that this team has peaked too early? I can almost sense a first-round bust-out. I'm sorry.
Well, Maz, why are you laughing and why are you so, like, of course they peaked too early.
So, yeah, but I love this point because, like, what are they supposed to do? Play bad on purpose?
No, there's nothing you can do about it, but there was at one point there, they had lost like three games in 35. I mean, something stupid.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I would just never word it as they peaked too early, as if like they had some control over
it. Well,
Maz, they
don't. What would you call it, Maz?
What I would say is they're not as good as they've looked during the regular season.
Okay, overrated.
That's how I would categorize it.
Guess who else is going to lose in the first round? The Las Vegas Knights.
There's no question they are.
They're going to go out. Watch this. If you're a gambling man, they're going to lose in four to the eight seed. Watch. Mark my words.
They're not going to lose in four. But Vegas, I can totally see bowing out. Vegas, to me.
Same with these guys.
Great story. Different. I'll tell you why it's different. Because look at Vegas' home road splits. They're a good road team. But at home, I think they have the most home points in the league and have had all year. It's very easy to see what's happened there.
The Vegas flu.
Teams come in, slap that ass. Go out till 4 o'clock in the morning, and you know, next thing you know, they can't. The way the Bruins played,
yeah, no strippers in the locker room.
The way the Bruins played that game in Vegas, that's why I wrote them off when I watched them. I'm like, this is a disaster, and they probably had their rookie dinner the night before. I mean, the rookies have to pay for them to. So I bet every team saved the night of their rookie dinner. It's a tradition. They make the rookies take them out, and they just blow out the pipes, and I bet they all save it for Vegas. I bet they all get ham-boned. That's their rookie dinner night. And they all show up wobbly leg the next night, and Vegas has cleaned up at home, the best home record in the league. I can explain Vegas' points. Bruins aren't quite that bad. I think the Bruins are more legit. But if you can give me a better example of a team or more classic example of a team peaking too early than this one, I'd like to know what it is. I mean, it doesn't make them bad, doesn't mean that they suck, and it doesn't mean they're going to lose. But there was a stretch there in the middle of the year where they had like a 900 winning percentage for like a 2 month stretch. They're not. That's peaking too early.
No, that is not being as good as your record says you are. Like the peaking too early thing always, you know, suggests that there's this process that they're building up towards, and they did it too early. No, they didn't. They're not as good as they look. I think we all know they could easily get bounced in the first round, easily. And my mind has never changed on that.
Felger and Maz, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Maz.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It was a pretty hot and heavy 3 days for the Seahawks, who have known they wanted to try to trade him and actually got a little bit of hotter market than they anticipated. It was the Philadelphia Eagles who did end up with him for a fifth-round pick and Marcus Johnson. They also get a seventh with Bennett. The Atlanta Falcons offered a late-round pick as well, and this deal was supposed to be done yesterday morning. And then, Dan, the New England Patriots came in and tried to make an offer, even though the two sides had basically agreed. But what they did instead of taking the Patriots offer was just hit pause, take a breath, consider all things. The Eagles did a lot of research into the kind of person that Michael Bennett was. In the end, they decided to make the trade and beef up their defensive line.
So hold on. They had agreed with the Patriots essentially verbally to make this trade?
No, the Eagles had agreed with the Seahawks essentially. And then the Patriots came in with a big offer. And then all sides had to hit pause.
Gotcha.
And in the end, the Seahawks stuck with the original offer.
Maz called bullcrap. Greg Bedard says, according to his sources, it's not an accurate report. So I don't know who you believe. Maybe it happened. Maybe it didn't. Maybe the Patriots came in late. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. Do you think they were in on Michael Bennett in some way, shape, or form?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, I do. And when I say I call bullcrap, I call bullcrap that they offered more and didn't get him. To me, there's something there we're not being told. They probably offered more, but they wanted them to restructure. Like, since when do the Patriots give up picks and pay a guy?
Right.
Like, no way you're getting both. No way. So, to me, there was some other wrinkle in there that prevented them from being a real suitor.
Okay, so it still just got me thinking about, if you're in on that kind of player, and you're now reportedly in on Aqib Talib, or you've been dancing around Richard Sherman, and you know, is there money coming in this year? Is there money coming in? And usually when there's money coming in, there's money going out. And so what's going out? What's the give? Where are they giving? And Brandon Cooks has been a part of trade rumors here for, you know, last couple weeks. You know, a lot of people dumped on Ben Volen when he said the Pats could just cut him or trade him. And I think there's more of a chance of that than I originally thought. It's $9 million free and clear off the cap. Off their budget anyway, real money, $9 million, boom, just like that. And Nate Solder's the other one. Nate Solder's up for a contract and is in line for, you know, 4 times 12 and guarantees north of 20. I mean, I don't know, when you're signing a 4-year deal, that's what you're usually getting, what amounts to a couple of those years guaranteed. And so I don't think Solder and Cooks are both going to be on this team next year. Let's put it to you like that. If they're going to add, I'll put it like this. If they're going to add, Maz, they're not keeping both Cooks and Solder. Something's going to give. Or they have both Cooks and Solder and Jonathan Jones is your starting corner next year and Eric Rowe is opposite Stephon Gilmore. That's what I'd say.
To me, Cooks is the one who's gone. If they pick Cooks over Solder, that's dumb. That's dumb. They need Solder more. He's harder to replace. They've won without players like Cooks in the past. Just to, if they feel like they made a mistake on Cooks, that they gave up too much to get him, cut your losses and move on. Cut your losses and move on. Brandon Cooks, to me, is not a winning player. Solder's the right call there.
And, in fact, Murray, do you have those numbers? Hopefully you didn't X out of it. I'm sure you did. But the record with and without Nate Solder, the Patriots' record with and without Nate Solder here the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, give me 1 second. I'll pull it right up. It's courtesy of Boston Sports Inf. So this, of course, is excluding the 4 games Tom Brady was suspended. But since the 2014 postseason with Nate Solder, the Patriots are 36-5 with Solder starting at left tackle when Brady is quarterback. Now, they're 9-5 since the 2014 postseason when Solder doesn't start.
And one of those games was the AFC Championship game in Denver where they got absolutely slaughtered on the offensive line.
Especially on that left side, too. Remember Edelman on that little, was like a little screen pass, or it was like a little, you know, pass to the side, and it's immediately blown up. Like, everything on that side that whole game, he was getting killed.
I mean, to me, you know, Solder is a run blocker. I've always felt this way. He's a road grader, man. That guy's awesome as a run blocker. He really is. He's spectacular. As a classic left tackle pass blocking, he's pretty good.
He's good. Not great.
He's not great. But the thought of what they would put there in place of him scares the living crap out of me. Scares me to no end. It's a bad spot to be vulnerable, and that, which is why I keep him.
So, again, me too. What do you think they're going to do?
I think they're going to keep him and let Cooks go.
Okay. Just, you know, ma'am, you've said it all day, that as you're assessing Tlaib or Sherman or any of these things, it's going to be on the Patriots' terms. Is Nate Solder going to be on the Patriots' terms?
Okay, but not every guy that they have already in-house is a guy that ultimately they make sign on their terms. Devin McCourty got a good deal. You know, and Dante Hightower, ultimately, I would say, got a better, more of a team-friendly deal, but still get out on the market.
Those guys were younger. Those guys were 26, 27. They were in their first free agent year. Solder's now on his third contract, I think.
Okay, and what was the last one, though? A couple of years? It was a short deal?
Yeah, it was 2 years, 20.
Okay, so I still think he's got football in him, and they can find ways to get around that. I think there's an incentive for him to stay because of the issues he's had with his kid and the medical care he can get here, and I think there's a common ground somewhere in there.
Murray, would you pull up that ESPN Insider story again?
Sure.
Where they predict the contracts for the top free agents? And again, I just think when you look at it, Nate Solder is going to be one of the top five players at any position. Well, take out quarterback. If you take out quarterback and take out Kirk Cousins and Drew Brees, who are free agents, and Case Keenum, if you take out the quarterbacks and you take out guys who are franchised, who aren't technically on the market, Solder's a top five player available. I mean, again, the Pro Football Talk list of the top 100 free agents, in order: Drew Brees, Kirk Cousins, Le'Veon Bell, DeMarcus Lawrence, Andrew Norwell, Case Keenum, Allen Robinson, Zeke Ansah, Trumaine Johnson, LaMarcus Joyner, Nate Solder. They have Nate Solder 11th. But of those 10 players ahead of him, Le'Veon Bell, DeMarcus Lawrence, Ansah, and LaMarcus Joyner have been franchised, so take them off the list. And Brees, Cousins, and Keenum are quarterbacks, which is sort of in a category of their own. So if you take out quarterbacks and franchise players, Nate Solder's the fourth highest-ranked guy on their list. He's going to get paid.
Yeah, and they have the projected contract here at 4 years, $49 million.
Do they give you a guarantee on there?
No, they do not.
Because that's what the bonus is, what's going to sway the Solder thing. Cooks is overpaid for what they want. But it is, I say, only $9 million. Solder might get upfront money in the 20s.
Oh, so they, you know, they name three players. They say this would put him ahead of some of these other tackles in the NFL, but he could get as much as half of this deal guaranteed.
Exactly.
So
exactly. Here, name another tackle. That's on that list.
Tyron Smith.
Dallas, right?
Trent Williams.
Hold on. Okay, so I'm just telling you, Nate Solder is going to be more money than I think we're giving it credit for. I mean, not even on an average annual value. The upfront money. I mean, that's going to be prodigious. So Tyron Smith signed 8 years, $97 million. That's not
Trent Williams then.
That's not a good comp. But anyway, I mean, I just think Solder is going to be that contract's not going to be on their terms. And that's what makes Solder, I think, a candidate to not be here. As soon as you're not on their terms, it's not many guys stay when it's not on the Patriots' terms.
Your hand's been forced with you going all in on Brady. You know, so your philosophy now has to change. Even though you wouldn't do this in the past, you're kind of going to have to now because the guy needs a left tackle at 41 years old.
I just don't think they have anywhere else to go. Again, Garcia had blood clots in his lungs and he lost 40 pounds. He was underweight to begin with. And then on top of it all, like, there's nobody. What are they going to do, go out on the free agent market and sign someone else? They're going to draft another left tackle this year? Like, I suppose they could take someone in the first round and draft him. It's certainly a possibility at the end of the first. How do you feel about that proposition if you're Tom Brady?
Yeah, how do you think Brady feels? Oh, you're giving me a rookie tackle now. You're giving me a kid. Nice.
No question. I mean, Brady would be agitated. I thought I just said that.
No, what?
About the Brady part.
I don't know you said if you were Brady.
Oh, my God. I think Brady would lose his mind.
I thought you said, well, whatever.
I just don't like the prospects they have after Solder. I don't like, where are they going to go? So here's what I would say to them. Figure it out.
4 years, $44 million, 22 guaranteed. I don't see them doing that. I don't see them doing that, Maz.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, you know, so I get the hit, you know, late hit, and I even understand that, you know, player got hurt and he gets a suspension, but three games and no appeal? Like, we need the guy. He puts in for an appeal, gives us a couple days, you know, we're shorthanded. I don't get it.
All right, so you don't need the guy. That's the one thing you're in a pretty good spot, Barry. I mean, you're going to be either the 2 or the 3 seed in your division. Probably the 2. You're up on Toronto by like 2 or 3 points and you have like 5 games in hand. So you don't need him. And in fact, I am in this camp. I mean, this is sort of a honky sort of opinion, but I think there's a big silver lining there with Bergeron, McAvoy, and Backus being out of these games. There's a little more freshness because the playoffs are such a grind that I think they're all going to be back. I think they're all going to be fine. I think they're going to be a little refreshed, in fact. So I think that's okay. You don't need Backus in the short term. The thing to comment on and to be not happy with is he's never even gotten fined in his 12-year career. Never even been fined.
It's amazing when you play the way he plays, too.
12 years in the league, 884 career games. Marshmont's been in the league 6 years, and he's gotten 8 of these things already. And he's been fined or suspended 8 times. That kid. Backus, not once. And the hit was bad, but it was certainly one of the worst things we've ever seen. And he gets 3 right out of the hop? Like, that was too much.
So, to me, you can talk about the severity of it. He was going to get popped, though. I mean, to me, once you took a good look at the hit, he was going to get popped. And as far as the appeal goes, he can't. It's in the CBA. Unless it's a 6-game suspension or more, he can't appeal. The Bruins, you just got to take it.
But they're fine.
All you got to do is swallow it. That's it. You have no choice.
Ernie and Revere. Hi, Ernie. What do you got?
Yeah, talk is they're going to move Cannon to left tackle, and they're going to deal with Waddle and Fleming. That's the scuttlebug on Bleacher Report.
Is it? Oh, well, if Bleacher Report has it, I believe it. I'm not even joking. Ernie, it would not surprise me one bit.
Yeah, that's because Cannon was normally a left tackle in college, and they moved him to the right, so they think it can put him back to left with no problem.
Yeah, that's great. Get ready for Brian Hoyer by week 6, then. That's awesome.
Maz shakes his head. You know who loves Marcus Cannon and gets the most out of him?
Dante?
And you know who's back next year? Dante Scarnecchia.
Yeah. So how come he sucked this year before he got hurt?
Well, I don't know what – I just don't know what to tell you.
So maybe there was an injury there, too, in which case it further complicates the issue for me.
I'm not telling you that it's the right thing to do or that I would do it. I'm telling you, get ready for the Pats to do it.
Yeah, so listen, ultimately they're the ones who make the decision, and you might be right, in which case, to me, they should be criticized for it severely. You're gonna let the next quarterback go. You're going to commit to Brady, and then you're going to take away his left tackle? Tell you what, why don't you let Gronk go too? No, just let him go. I mean, what do you need him for? Just put Jacob Hollister out there. You make do. Like it reaches the point where it gets stupid with them sometimes in terms of thinking you can just plug any old guy in there. You know, if you take Cannon and put him on the left side, now you're hurting yourself at two spots. Dumb. Just pay Solder and move on.
Jesse in the car. Go ahead. What do you got, sir?
Hey, guys. I'll be quick. Just had a thought. Do you think it makes a difference at all that Richard Sherman doesn't have an agent? He acts as his own agent. Do you think that helps or hurts his chances on coming to a team like the Patriots that operates the way they do? And then a quick comment on the way out. Maz, you sound like absolute crap today.
he doesn't sound good. You okay, pal?
Yeah, it's been worse. Believe me, last year, if you remember, I couldn't even put a sentence together. So it's been heading this way. I don't know what it's going to be like tomorrow, but it could be worse tomorrow.
Patriots love players who don't have agents. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God, they love those guys. Love them. Brewski was the most notable. I can't remember who else fits in that category, but, yeah, they hear no agent, their eyes light up. No brainer. Are you kidding me? We've got Mike in Maine on the Patriots.
Hey, good looking.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, just a thought on Sherman or Tlaib. I think I'd rather have Sherman because if I remember right, last time we had Tlaib, didn't he kind of dog it at the end of the year?
He didn't dog it, but he has a little bit of a history of tapping out in playoff games or not making it through playoff games. Sort of a weird history. Like
the famous Wes Welker play.
Yeah. I don't think he is, and I thought it happened in Denver once or twice. I don't think he lacks toughness or anything. I think he gets too amped up or he gets too nuts. He gets like nutty. I think he overheats. I think he overheats, Murray.
In the red.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think the needle's in the red, and it just overheats, and he loses his mind and does something stupid or gets hurt. Like, it's something like that.
We didn't cost him in 2015. I mean, they ended up winning the Super Bowl.
Nope, it didn't, but I've told you, he should have been thrown out of that game. First drive, second drive of the game, he face-masked a Carolina receiver as bad as I've ever seen because he was out of control. Like, Tlaib was out of control to start that game.
Got to set that tone.
Because he did. He did. He set that tone, too. And so there's that element with Tlaib. There's just always that sort of undercurrent of what's coming next with this fella.
No, of crazy and unpredictable. Like, you're getting one or the other with him. He's nuts. But that's part of the reason I want him. They could use a little crazy on that defense.
Bill in Melrose, hi.
Hey, Mike, I'm going to be really quick, but please let me get in two things, and you just answer, and I'll get off. One, I agree with you on Kraft giving the order to tell Bill to trade Brady, but I think the reason they didn't get much from him is because Kraft told him, trade him, and you trade him now, because I don't want to hear Tom crying to me anymore. And two, can you tell me, if you throw for 500 yards in the Super Bowl, and it's record-setting, how do you only score 33 points? Thanks, guys.
Only 33. I'll answer. You miss a field goal because the Navy snapper that Bill decided to draft out of nowhere botched a snap, so there's 3 points. Your kicker, as he likes to do in big games, he shanked an extra point, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Right?
Yes, he hooked.
Okay, so now that's four straight championship games. Is it three or four straight he's yanked an extra point? All he does is miss extra points in big games.
Yeah, if it's a big game, you can set a watch to it.
He hooked it, right? Like
He hooked it.
It wasn't even close. Yes, that's right, he did. So you take, and that was a chippy of a field goal. That was an easy field goal. So there's 4 points. You're at 37. How's that? And then you fumble on your very last drive, going for 40. The offense was right there.
No, the offense wasn't a problem in this game. It was not an offensive issue.
You didn't punt.
The defense has major issues, major. And I say major, it's really in the front seven. They need another corner now that Butler's going to be out of the picture, and that linebacking core is a complete disaster.
Okay, on Garoppolo, I absolutely believe, because I believe it because people I trust have told me, Bedard, others, that Kraft ordered the trade. And whether he verbalized it or not is not important. He made it clear to Belichick what has to happen. I don't care if he stomped his feet. I don't care if he used sign language. Well, however, he made it clear to Bill, get rid of the kid. And so Bill got rid of the kid. What Kraft did not say is, trade him for a bag of footballs. Kraft did not say get rid of the kid and don't shop him. Just send him to your friend or take care of him and only get back a kicking tee. That is not what what Kraft said. Kraft said, you're sticking with Brady, and do me a favor, get rid of the kid so Tom will get out of my ear. I absolutely believe that. But why only one team? Why not shop the pick? Was that a Garoppolo thing? Was that a Kraft thing? Was that a Brady thing? Or is that just how Bill does business? Great insight was given to us on this by Jay Glazer at the Super Bowl. I want to play that sound again because I find it instructive. We'll do that in our long commercial-free segment next.
I can't even do my Jim Rome voice today.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
What the Patriots do also is they strategically do put people kind of where they want. That's how they do business. Everybody has a way in doing business. That's how the Patriots
Why?
Do business. I don't know. I'm not them. But it's worked out pretty well.
I mean, so
but
the
I
wins
agree.
And losses, but they could have gotten more for both
they
players.
They could have just opened it up for the highest bidder, no doubt about it. For whatever reason, they don't do that. They don't open it up. They don't do that. They're like, they have certain teams that they know they can do business with, and that's it. They don't like their business out there.
Just that one piece, you know. Right there, he says, well, it's worked out pretty well for him, right? So have they won 5 championships and been to 8 Super Bowls because Bill doesn't shop his draft picks or doesn't shop his players? He just sends them to friends or tries to take care of them and doesn't let people show. Is that why they've won?
No, I'll tell you what. Maybe that's an exercise worth doing. It's like, let's examine some of the trades. Straight trades now. You know, not like, I mean, the Chandler Jones deal. Was that a good deal?
A second and...
Jonathan Cooper.
Jonathan Cooper.
Offensive lineman who never made the team for a player
yeah.
who led the NFL in sacks last year with 17.5.
I mean, I would say the Seymour deal was a good deal. They get a first-round pick. They get Solder out of it. No problem there.
Jamie Collins? They got a comp pick for Jamie Collins.
No, not that's enough.
Stupid.
Right, Logan. Right, wasn't that the deal? A low third or what amounted to a comp? There was something. It was a third, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, Logan Mankins was a fourth and Tim Wright, I think, if I remember it right. I don't remember who they took with the fourth, but Tim Wright sucked. I mean, I know he caught a couple of touchdowns when he was wide open and there weren't anyone within 15 feet of him, so that's fine. Great. Anybody could have caught those.
Well, so, but listen, and now I want to play the whole Glazer thing because, again, just as a setup, I like Glazer's input because I think he's a impartial bystander. He's not a Patriots honk. He's not a ESPN hater. You know, he's neither. In fact, he cares more about guys rolling around on a mat than he does about football. But he's super tapped in and knows things, and I think he has valuable insight. And he has no dog in the fight, is just another way to put it. So I don't think he's trying to promote the Patriots or protect the Patriots or bury the Patriots or any of those things. He's just telling you as he knows it. And I think he knows stuff. And so that's why I like his perspective. And I've never heard anyone really describe it this way, but we had him at the Super Bowl, Jay, from obviously Fox, and he, it was, you know, centered around the Garoppolo thing, but in the course of his answer, I think you get some insight into how the Patriots do business, and it gave you insight to Garoppolo, and maybe Garoppolo was just about the way Bill does business with all of these guys, nothing to do with Kraft or Brady or getting back at anyone or any of these things. So it's a 2-minute cut, but I think it's worth it. Here's Jay Glazer with us at the Super Bowl on this topic. What went down with that Garoppolo trade? It still doesn't seem right.
Well, I think at the end they realized, I do think they looked at hoping as long as they could to keep Garoppolo, and they realized it doesn't look like Tom's going anywhere. And in the end, you know, they might as well get something. And what the Patriots do also is they strategically do put people kind of where they want, right? The Jamie Collins thing went down. Okay, you want out? We'll send you to Cleveland, right?
So what was the strategy behind San Fran?
Because they love Garoppolo. So Lynch played there, which people forget. So him and Belichick are very close. And they put it out like it was him and the head coach.
Shanahan.
With the relationship he's had with Mike and Kyle. And that was part of it. But it was also John Lynch was a big part of this as well. They didn't open it up for everybody there. But I think in the end, if Tom's going to play in another few years, you can't have Jimmy back.
Okay, but that doesn't – so, I mean, I understand.
But I think they went into it this year thinking, okay, there's a good chance this could be it for Tom, and okay, we got to figure something out. And I think eventually they just realized we're not going to be able to and Jimmy wanted to play.
Okay.
He was like, I don't want to wait anymore.
Why not take offers from other teams? I mean, I know if you want to do right by the player, Jay, right. But that's not what's in the best interest of the team.
That's not how they do business. They did with Chandler Jones, too. They called the Cardinals, right?
They didn't shop him either?
They didn't shop me. They didn't open up, but I didn't understand it.
Why?
I got a call from the Cardinals asking about Chandler, you know, how he is, if he's, because obviously his brother John's had some issues, and if they have similar issues, well, not at all. And they're saying that's how they do business. Everybody has a way of doing business. That's how the Patriots
Why?
Do business. I don't know, I'm not them, but it's worked out pretty well.
I mean,
but
the
I
wins
agree.
And losses, but they could have gotten more for both
they
players.
They could have just opened it up for the highest bidder, no doubt about it. For whatever reason, they don't do that. Even when they did Randy Moss to the Vikings.
It was, yeah, Vikings,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Bill did like Randy, right? And he's still, even that, he's like, and obviously there was a lot of tension going there. So he sent him somewhere. He could have sent him to the Abyss somewhere, but he didn't.
So why did
they don't open it up? They don't do that. They're like, they have certain teams that they know they can do business with. And that's it. They don't like their business out there.
Okay. There's so much I don't like about that. Why don't they want their business out there? Who cares? Why are you so paranoid?
Because they don't want to look weak. Or Bill doesn't want to look weak.
And why are you so, like, conscious of your business being out? What does that matter? If your business is out there but you get a first-round pick, isn't that better than having your business not out there and getting a second-round pick? Like, who cares if your business is out there if that gets you a better return? I just, like, give it up already with that. The secretiveness and the paranoia, it just, how does that help you? So you don't want your business out there. I hate that part of it. This whole thing of, you know, I mean, look at all those examples. The Garoppolo thing. They love Garoppolo, said Glazer. And John Lynch and Belichick are very close. So it's an inside deal on both ends. He wants to take care of Garoppolo, and he likes Lynch. If he didn't like Lynch, would he go on somewhere else? Like, that's why we're doing deals now? The Moss thing. Moss, I mean, Bill did like Randy, he says. So he wants to take care of Randy. He didn't send him to the Abyss like he could him. He sent him back to Minnesota where Randy wanted to go. So are you doing what's best for your team, or are you trying to take care of the player there on the way out of the door because you like him? It's your guy. And so you just, the more you see
the Collins thing, you know, he was freelancing too much, pissed him off, so he sends him to NFL Siberia, sends him to Cleveland for, you know, a third-round pick.
So that one he did send to Siberia because he didn't like the guy.
Yeah.
Right? So it's all about whether Bill likes you or not. Are you his guy or not?
What was his relationship with Bruce Arians? Was it good? Because this one, you know, it's easy to say it's worked out for them because Mitchell contributed in that Super Bowl win a couple of years ago.
Chandler Jones?
Yeah. The Chandler Jones one, though.
I don't think it worked.
No, overall, I'm with you. I don't think that's worked out.
Would you rather have the sack leader in the NFL or Malcolm Mitchell?
Yeah, I would rather have Chandler Jones. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you get Joe Tooney out of it, too. So that's the one I'm trying to think. Like, why there? Because I feel like you could have got more for that guy.
They didn't get enough for him. We said it at the time. They didn't get enough for him. And look, they sold low. They sold low. Now, would they have gotten...
They didn't shop him. They only called Arizona.
Would they have gotten much higher? I don't know. But what they got was a low second and a guard who, at the time, people tried to shove down our throats as a potential...
Top 10 pick.
Right, starting
line. Why do you say Tooney? Did they trade out of the second and get picks out of it?
Yeah, they got a third and a fifth. They took Mitchell and Tooney.
You know, I mean, that's so... Like, that's... I mean, I don't even know if I would break the trade down like that. I mean, they made two good draft picks. I give them credit for making good draft picks.
But even just taking it as Cooper in the second, Cooper was a bust immediately, so you should have got at least a better player off of their roster.
Murray, they cut him.
Okay, so look.
They cut Cooper.
Yeah.
This is not my concern whether they won or lost that trade. It's the methodology behind it. They didn't call around the league to see if they could get anything more.
No.
Doesn't that boggle your mind and blow you away?
It pisses me off as a fan, and if I hear this either as Robert or Jonathan Kraft, I look at this as negligent. You know, if I start to hear this and really dig into it, like, what, huh, what? This isn't in the best interest of my team and my franchise. What are you doing?
Because you like the guy or don't like the guy, or you like the guy you're dealing with or you don't like the guy you're dealing with, or you just don't want anyone knowing your business. Who cares? What is this? Do you have the missile codes?
I get it. Every once in a while, in any business, you're going to make a decision based on a relationship. But if you really look at these and peel back this onion, every single time, you're like, what? Huh?
So then
this one, too? This one, huh?
And so Jay says, hey, they do what they do. It's worked out pretty well for them, right? Is that why they've had their success? Like, we've gotten so many things backwards that explains their success. They overpay for special teamers. Well, how can you argue with the results? They're tight with the money. You can't argue with the results. Bill doesn't let his players talk about injuries. How can you argue with the results? On trades, Bill doesn't call around. He just ships it to guys that he likes or doesn't like, depending on how he feels about the player. Well, it works, right? Is that why it works?
No, it works because of Brady.
He's always had Brady as his trump card. That's why.
Or does it work because he's got the singular best player at the most important player at the position for 18 years, and he himself as a coach is brilliant? He is a brilliant coach. And his quarterback, there's never been anyone better. Something tells me that's why they're there. Not because they overpay for Brandon Bolden and Brandon King, and not because they don't shop Jamie Collins.
Yeah, he's playing chess while everyone else plays checkers.
So, like, you know, it's going to be interesting. When the quarterback does change and the tide goes out, Warren Buffett used to say this about investing. When the tide goes out, you see who's wearing nice bathing suits and who's naked. You know, when the tide goes out, we're going to see what's really good business and what's not. And are all the bad decisions and bad methodologies just covered by the fact that Bill is so freaking good at his job and Brady's so good at his on game day that it covers everything else up?
Yes. Yes. I mean, to me, plain and simple, yes. Like, again, and I know now we're talking specifically now about, you know, Belichick's little network and how he works it on all these deals. But this isn't the first time we've had, you know, questioning. Hell, you could talk about, like, the idea of taking Tavon Wilson in the second round. What's the logic there?
You can add a third thing that's benefited them,
okay,
too.
But
stupidity and ineptitude of others.
But I don't blame him on Tavon Wilson. So he got that personnel decision wrong. These things we're talking about, it's not personnel acumen. He knows Chandler Jones turned out to be a great pick. And what he did with it, Malcolm Mitchell and Joe Tooney, good picks. He's still picking the right players most of the time. He's not perfect. But most of the time, he's still picking the right players because he knows what the hell he's doing, or he's just a brilliant football mind. But the methodology behind it, this thing where it's about taking care of his friends and bearing his enemies, and at the expense of making what's the best deal or not, is that getting in the way? I don't know. So that's that Glazer sound. I like it.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.